Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. This weekend was my final soccer game as a member of AYSO United, a local club soccer team in Davis. My coaches and teammates played a huge role in my development as an athlete and a person over the past few years that I've been playing soccer, and I've been thinking quite a bit lately about what makes a great coach in youth athletics. This is especially timely because my summer job for the past few years has been working as a coach for the City of Davis in their youth basketball program, and I've signed again this summer and want to make sure that I do a good job. So I decided to focus this episode of Time Out Radio on understanding what makes a good youth coach and what aspiring coaches can do to make sure they help their young players develop to their full potential. Being a coach is more than just knowing all about your sport and its rules. It's making sure that the kids you work with feel motivated to come back to the field even when things get tough. 70% of children quit sports by the time they turn 13. The top reason for this? It isn't fun anymore. So when coaching young kids especially, you want to make sure that they enjoy practices and games so that they stay motivated to return next season. Training, competition, and fun can go hand in hand. The next thing I've realized over the past few years of being an athlete is that coaches are not just teachers. They're also mentors who can shape a young athlete's personality for good or bad. Coaches who run boring or unchallenging practices could end up with players who don't put in their best effort or aren't engaged. On the other hand, coaches who overcoach and give their players too much input can end up with athletes who don't think for themselves. And coaches with a win-at-all-cost attitude can hurt the physical and mental health of their players and end up with anxious and burnt-out athletes. Good coaches are also role models. How coaches communicate after a win or loss teaches a young athlete a lot about how to interact with people in other situations. So if coaches walk the talk and demonstrate the values of good sportsmanship, respect, and fair play themselves, they set an example for young athletes both on and off the field. Our guests on today's episodes are Eric Moody and Philip Toy, who have been coaches of my AYSO United soccer team. I played my last game for them this weekend, but the lessons that they taught me about soccer and life will stay with me as I go on to college this fall. Then we explore our place of the week, England, which is the birthplace of association football, or soccer as we call it here in the US. Up next is High and Low by Empire of the Sun.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Our guests on today's episode are Eric Moody and Philip Toy, who are both coaches of my AYSO United soccer team. So, Coach Moody and Philip, welcome to Time Out Radio. First off, when did your guys' passion for soccer begin?
Well, I'll take that. I played as a kid, probably about 10 years old. I played for about 4 years, and then I left it for a long time and came back to it as an adult, playing indoor and a little bit of outdoor. So I guess I've kind of always loved it.
Yeah, Philip?
For me, I grew up in playing Davis AYSO, started when I was about seven. And I think it was probably my first couple AYSO select seasons that I really found that I really loved the sport and loved playing with my teammates. And from then on, I was just set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you're not on the soccer field, Coach Moody, you're an English teacher at Holmes Junior High. And then Philip, you grew up in Davis and are currently a software developer. So why and when did you both decide to become youth soccer coaches also on the side?
As a teacher, I was also one of the coaches for the school soccer team. So I started there, and then when I had kids and they started playing soccer, then I started coaching them.
Mm-hmm. And then for me, it actually started with my dad. He was a volunteer coach for AYSO, and he coached me and my siblings for many fall and select seasons. And he was sort of inspirational because he didn't know much about soccer, but he just wanted to be a part of our experience. And I loved having him out there with me and my brother, my sister, and when I had the opportunity to coach my younger brother, I remember those days and how much I loved having my family and having people around that I loved going through the same experience on the soccer field as I did. I'd hope to give some of that back.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say each of your coaching style or philosophy is when coaching the kids?
Yeah, I really want the players to have fun. I want them to enjoy themselves. I want them to improve as players. And I've been really influenced a lot by Ted Lasso, the show Ted Lasso. He's such a positive coach. So I think exuding that positivity for the players, I think first and foremost, that's important as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think that positive coaching and positive culture building environment is probably the number one most important thing for coaches to do. Like personally, I like the player development side. I really do. I think that's a mindset more so than anything else. I think it's not being afraid to expand your game and make mistakes. And I think that's where having that culture, like from Ted Lasso, is really important because you want to be able to make those mistakes and not feel like you're letting everyone down. Like people should be supporting you on your team to continue to grow your game.
Yeah. And, I've really enjoyed having both of you as my coaches this year. And, you both really work hard to make this a great experience for the team and help give it your all. So what do you most enjoy about coaching throughout the years that you have been?
I'm going to go back to what Philip said, that player development, seeing the players improve week after week, seeing them make their own decisions on the field and right or wrong, recover or follow up with those. It's that player development. I totally agree with Philip on that.
And then for me, yeah, I like the development side, but I think the thing I enjoy most is the camaraderie and confidence players walk away with from the pitch. Winning or losing is not that big of a thing long term, and seeing like the joy and the support that the team has after every goal or loss, it doesn't matter what the scenario is, but how much they support each other and how close the team becomes every season. It's always, I think, the most fun thing for me to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're having, I think Philip is going to agree with this. This year, Rohan, you and your teammates are just exuding what Philip just said, that camaraderie, which is, it's so wonderful to watch.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that. And, over time, obviously, ups and downs are going to happen when coaching or playing. What were some challenges that you've had to face during coaching youth soccer? And I guess, how would you say that you've been able to overcome those?
One of the hardest things about youth soccer, especially at your age group, is you know, the players are having other things going on in their lives, whether that's getting ready to graduate high school or working or whatever the case might be. And so sometimes it's really hard to get the number of players to come out to the trainings or sometimes to the games because of these other commitments. But I think it's super helpful to remember that soccer is just one component of a person's life. And we are hoping to build people, not necessarily soccer pros. And by allowing somebody to have multiple interests, I think that makes for a more well-rounded person.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think what challenges specifically on the field, besides getting attendance and schedule conflicts, is like not overcoaching and letting the players really play when they're out there, and taking a step back and letting them find their own game within every game. And then I would say also not projecting my expectations of what I want onto players or the team. I think everyone has a reason they're out there, and their priorities, and they're trying to get something out of every game or every practice. It might not always align with what I necessarily want, but I need to acknowledge a lot of times what they need at this time, what they want to get out of it, and work with them on what they need, and not always kind of be more dictatorial and be like, you need to do my agenda or play at my pace and be exactly what I want this team to be. It's always a back and forth. It's always a conversation with players and the other coaches on our journey of what we want to build. Yeah, it's never a one-sided conversation.
For sure. And, you know, soccer is such a popular sport around the world, and especially so also in the U.S. is, you know, millions of teens participate in soccer each year. And so sport participation has lots of benefits, especially on the team physical and mental health. But all these positive outcomes of sports don't happen automatically. You know, coaches need to create structure where players can thrive in their sport. So what would you say are some key things to keep in mind when coaching young soccer players?
I'm going to go with, we're not trying to develop professionals. I mean, it would be great if our players go on to play pro, but remembering that youth players are youth. They're not expected to carry the world on their shoulders at this point. And so it's definitely not right for a coach to heap that onto a player and have, you know, these expectations that they are going to win every game by a lot and blow out their opponents and be the next Messi's or Ronaldo's or whoever is out there in the field. They are their own people, and we want to support their own personal journeys. And I think that's important to remember. I mean, we're the adults. We've been there. It's not our time anymore. It's time to help them be who they can be.
Yeah, I think Coach Moody just hit pretty much everything I would say. Yeah, everyone has their own soccer journey, where they want to go and what they want to get out of it. As a coach, it's, you know, our job to facilitate that and create that environment. It's not to push any other agenda besides what they want to get out of this sport. And for each person, that's different. And most of it's not about winning or losing on the field. It's much more than that.
Yeah, for sure. And what would be some words of wisdom or advice that you would give to youth athletes?
I would say, in my experience going up through a lot of these systems and sports, it's, you don't really remember many of the wins and losses. I remember how hard I played and some of my teammates and many of the friends I made for a lifelong friends I still have now, and just lessons of working with each other, working with coaches, working with teammates, and being a part of something bigger. Those are the things that really stick with you for the rest of your life. And that's what you should really be focusing on, not the wins and losses, because those just kind of fade over the years.
Yeah, I couldn't have said better. Yep.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to someone who specifically want to get into coaching youth soccer, especially not both of you are almost at this point, you know, seasoned vets?
I would say first, contact the organization that you want to volunteer with to coach, get a little bit of training, and then just jump in. Coaches are going to make mistakes along the way, and it's learning moments for us too. It's just a matter of jumping in, getting a little bit of training, jumping in, get some experience, bounce ideas off of people. Coach Philip and I talk just about after every training. We talk about what went well, what didn't, what we might do for next time. bouncing those ideas off each other is super helpful too. So finding a partner that you could really work with and then grow together as a coaching team, I'd say that's pretty helpful.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been coaching for a while now, and I'm sure that, you know, you've had many great experiences both on and off the field. For both of you, what is one of your favorite moments so far during your coaching career that you've had?
Philip is smiling. That is such a difficult question because A, there are so many, and B, how do you pick just one? I would say the smiles on the players' faces when they finish a game, usually when there's a win, not always when there's a loss, but the smiles on the faces of the players that they had a good day. They gave it their all. They had a good day. They enjoyed themselves. That's the best feeling. It's kind of like as a teacher, when I see the light bulb, the proverbial light bulb go on above their heads, when they get the idea, I'd say it's the same thing for my players. When they get it and they're having fun, there are so many of those. It happens all the time. So, I mean, I could say that, you know, winning a league banner or something like that, but it's more important seeing the smiling faces at the end of a game.
Yeah, I would agree. It's those light bulb moments when I see a player like evolve or gain confidence or just find their niche in the game or in the team. I mean, it's on the field where I see it, but I know they're going to take away something that's going to go beyond the pitch. I know that they're going to gain confidence in life. They're going to gain something that's going to last a lot longer. And those are the moments I think that we as coaches and as Eric as a teacher, you know, those are like impactful moments where, yeah, it's going to have much more of a long-term, lifelong impact potentially than the results of the game or the moments on the field.
Yeah, and we talk about that all the time, don't we, Philip? We see that with our players, and we talk about that, and we just feel so proud. Like, yes, they're doing that thing. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
And for my last question, we're going to end things off with sort of a fun out-of-the-box question. So what's sort of an interesting talent that you guys have or something that people might not know about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of an open book. I think a lot of people know that I've been studying American Sign Language for a while, and that ability to just converse with other people, because I'm not fluent in any other languages, but I'm learning this the sign language to be able to communicate with people who don't voice. And I think it's really rewarding and fun. It's a neat language. It really is beautiful. So I encourage everyone to learn.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I think most people kind of know I do a lot of like different activities, some climbing, marathon training, but I also play the guitar and sing really badly. Most people don't see that outside of my immediate family.
Well, thank you so much, Coach Moody and Philip, for joining me on Time Out Radio today.
We're happy to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Of course, that's Eric Moody and Philip Toy from AYSO United Davis.
Clearly meant for more, and a life launched in
And that was Youth by Glass Animals. In today's travel segment, we visit England, home to 56 million people. Its capital is London, and its currency is the pound sterling. England is the largest of the four parts of the country called the United Kingdom. The other parts of the UK are Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. The country has a rainy and temperate climate, with mild winters, cool summers, and rain in all seasons. England's longest river is the Thames River. It may come as no shock to you that the language of English originated in England. It's the most spoken language across the globe, but you may be surprised to know that French was the official language of England for over 300 years after William the Conqueror of France completed the Norman conquest of 1066. French was spoken by noblemen, and people of lower social status spoke English. Then in 1362, the official language changed back to English after the loss of the French region of Normandy and the Hundred Years' War against France. In addition to the language of English, England's other important contributions include a range of advances in science and technology. Sir Isaac Newton wrote the laws of motion. Stephen Hawking is known for his theory of exploding black holes. The World Wide Web was invented in England in 1989 by Tim Berners-Lee, who began this work while working at CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, to help scientists share information with each other. The World Wide Web was used for this purpose until 1993 when CERN released it to the public. England is located on the island of Great Britain, and most of its area is covered with hills, with plains in its center and southeast. England's highest point is the 3,210-foot-high Scafell Pike in the Cumbrian Mountains. The South Downs National Park has a stunning mixture of coast and countryside. Most of this national park is made up of chalk downland, a unique landscape in southern England where white sedimentary rock is exposed at the surface. The chalk reaches the English Channel, where it forms the dramatic Seven Sisters Cliffs. No matter where you go in England, you'll always be within 70 miles of the ocean. The Channel Tunnel, also known as the Channel, connects England and France. It's the longest undersea tunnel in the world, with over 23 miles of tunnel, 250 feet below the surface of the English Channel. You can take a train through the tunnel to get from London to Paris in 2.5 hours. If all this outdoor exploration makes you hungry, you can eat the immensely popular chicken tikka masala in one of England's thousands of curry houses, then wash it down with some tea. For a gastronomic adventure, show up at the annual cheese rolling competition, which has been around since 1826. It involves rolling a huge 9-pound circle of cheese down a hill. Competitors chase it to the bottom, and the first person to reach the finish line wins the cheese. England is credited for inventing modern soccer in 1863 with the founding of an official governing body to establish rules, the Football Association. The first ever international soccer game took place in 1872 at Hamilton Crescent in Glasgow, Scotland, between national teams from Scotland and England. The game drew a crowd of 4,000 people and ended in a 0-0 draw. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, the nation of England. Alright, let's call a timeout for Timeout Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to KDIRT 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.